This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Melissa Warren, and the name of the business is At Home Care. And what they do is they go into your home, and they'll do a lot of things that you normally would have been able to do before you got older or you became sick and unable to take care of some of the normal things, the tasks that you do at home. And that what they do is they run errands for you, do your laundry, personal needs, light housekeeping, transportation to appointments, grocery shopping, meal preparation, medication reminders, and many, many other things. And their office is located at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, behind Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. Or you can just call them on the phone at 713-4639. Or if you have internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And it'll be worth the while just to give them a call and to talk to Melissa. This is one of those days where teamwork really comes through for you. I was listening to Brian the other day when they had one of these little glitches, and we have one today. My buddy Liz Bennett is out of state, and it's going to be impossible for her to be here today. And Brian is here, and I got Danny Page. And Fred Goodwin dropped everything he was doing.
And to
come over. And Ken Beck is here.
Well, at least the show's saved now. I was worried when Danny was coming in here. So.
Well, actually, I want Danny to be able to say some things because he was chomping at the bit because he heard that I had an opening and he couldn't wait to be on the air. And I really appreciate it, Danny. You know, we Jakes Avenue people, we kind of stick together.
Truman, I'm telling you, buddy, I've just been waiting. You've been on here, what, 3-4 months now?
Yeah.
And it's just, actually, he's never asked me, Brian, never asked me to be on.
And he walks by you walk by his office every day, and he didn't know it was January that you started? Three or four months?
You know, that's pretty bad since you do most of the advertising for me.
Time flies when you're having fun, right?
I'm telling you. I know too much on Truman, so I can't stay here long. I have a list in my office I didn't bring in here. My brother, Bobby, my oldest brother in Truman, used to run around together when they were 15, 16 years old. Now, this is before he was able to, you know, nobody really knew who Truman Jones was.
They still don't. Nothing has changed there, big boy.
And I'd love for Bobby to be listening to call in today because he could clarify some of this stuff. But, you know, I'm not going to do a lot of it because, you know, you were a well-respected man in the community. And I guess you still are in a lot of
Until he started radio, is that it?
Do you know that the radio station has given me a new life? It really has.
Good.
Because everywhere I go, nobody talks. Well, a few will talk about the old experiences, but right now they really are interested in radio, and radio seems to be the new wave. I mean, everybody just loves it, and everywhere I run into in Rutherford County, there's people that are really coming up and thanking me for the show, which
and
really makes
do.
Me
and they
makes
do me too.
Happy.
You know, I've been able since you've came on to just I can't get. I mean, we can't sell any more spots. You heard him say Brian, he didn't want to do any more commercials. I've been able to go out and buy me a new truck since you've been here.
I saw it,
and I'm really.
I wish I could afford it.
And it's all because of you, Truman, and I just want to thank you for it.
Well, I appreciate you going up and running all this business and taking your cut out of my business. And one of these days, I'm going to be able to afford a big red truck, too.
Well, somebody said it was WKU red, but the blue emblems really look good on it, so that's kind of why I did it. They didn't have a blue one. I'd have bought it if they'd had it.
Have you ever tried to put orange with it? It looked good.
You have got certainly lost his mind right here on me.
But I do have season tickets to MTSU. I will be at the ball games.
Can we get some applause fan. From that and from the crowd here? Truman, you're a good man. I expect to see you at all the games.
I will be there.
And I'm sure you can come by there. But you can come by our tailgate and tailgate with us where Kelly Holcomb and I do our pregame show 3 hours before kickoff, and I might even have you on the air one day.
Well, you tell me where you are, and I'll be over there. Are you going to have Brockwurst?
We have everything. We have probably the best tailgate there. We're right on Greenland Drive. I know you're familiar with the Hillbilly Hilton. Everybody in Murfreesboro knows where that is. Yes. I'm parked right beside him with a motorhome that me and a few other guys here in town own. And Kelly Holcomb and I do the first show for MTSU football. It starts 3 hours before kickoff. And actually, I'm still looking for two more. I can have two more advertisers for anybody. Hey, I got that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I can get two more people.
And they are cheap. Advertise on radio is the cheapest way to advertise and the best way to advertise.
Inexpensive. Let's use inexpensive. Cheap is a different word, okay?
Oh, you can't put cheap and radio in the same sentence.
Absolutely.
It's impossible.
Absolutely. But, yeah, Truman, we grew up on the same street. And, of course, you are significantly older than I am. But, everybody knew everybody on the street, didn't we? I to this day can almost go house by house and tell you who lived in each house.
Oh, I can do that.
And that is an amazing feat because you can't do that where you live now. Every mama knew every boy, every girl on that street. If you did something wrong, you knew you couldn't get out of it.
Exactly.
Because they's going to call Miss Ruby down the road in your case.
Yeah.
And they's going to call Rosetta down there on my case. Yeah. Somebody was going to get a butt whooping when the day was out.
Oh, you might got it before you ever got to your home.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had the authority to take care of the business matter which kid it was.
Yeah.
And that's something I think we're missing today. You tried to... punish a child from another home now, and they'll have you in jail.
That's true. That's true. And I can't. Your dad was pretty intimidating, so we didn't. Anything Mr. Jones said to you, you were really scared. You know.
Oh yeah, your dad was that way too.
Mr. Clancy was pretty intimidating down there.
When you stayed away from him.
And we can call last names, but people that lived on there, you know, it's amazing. The guy, Roscoe Brown, he lived down there at one time somewhere?
Mr. Brown lived on the Woodbury Highway. Yeah. He was on the right just before you got to Woodcraft. And on Woodcraft, of course, you had the Lanhams. And my grandmother was and granddad were on Woodcraft. And Fred is here. That was his grandma and granddad, too. And we all just kind of all grew up together. It's the greatest place in the world to go.
Was there not any young boy that didn't haul hay for Comus at one time? Maybe when Comus would come down the road.
You talking about Comer?
Comer Jakes. Yeah,
I didn't.
You did?
No.
He would ride down the road on his tractor, and if you were right there and you were willing to go, you jumped on that wagon. And, you know, we were making a quarter or something or an hour or whatever it was, and he'd feed us, I think, every day. But I can remember doing that when I was 12, 13 years old, just trying to find a way to make some money. And he'd come down there on his wagon, and I finally made it up to where I was driving a tractor. So I thought I was big time back then.
Well, of course, now, he wouldn't let Bud Mitchell and me and about three or four others on his property. He ran us off his property.
Was that George Hudson? Was he in it, too?
No, George Hudson wasn't in that one.
It's fun to throw these old names up about people that were down there. Of course, you know, I went to school at Kittrell, and you did too a while, didn't you?
I went through the sixth grade.
Through the sixth grade.
And went to Mitchell Nelson.
And I went through the eighth grade. Mom and Dad moved over on Fern Drive, and we went over there. And then I had to go to Central. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want to. But my brothers and sisters, my sister Wanda, she finished from Kittrell, graduated a year Monk did.
What year did you graduate at Central?
I didn't graduate from Central. I was in the first class at Riverdale High School, 1973. Oh. Mm-hmm. And I just turned 46 years old, because that's kind of amazing.
You turned 46 in school?
No.
At Riverdale? Did he not say that a minute ago?
You just went right over your head, didn't you?
That's what I heard.
Well, you've got some real guests in here, but if you got anything you want to drill me with, you might as well get it over with. I'm going to let the real men sit here and you can talk to them. I know there's something, because there's very seldom a day goes by that you don't rib me somewhere, some way, somehow.
You know, you're just the Pages are just like family to all of us.
Right.
I mean, we all grew up as brothers and sisters and all of that. And it's fun to still have people around that you grew up with, that you still have all those memories and still can poke a little bit of fun at each other. And that's what makes life worth living, is a long-time friendship.
Yeah, we did. And, you know, I can remember the day Russell got killed. It was amazing. I was a kid.
He was 19.
He was 19, and I was, I don't know, 12, something like that, 13. Mm-hmm. But I was just getting ready to go to high school, and we moved a little shortly after that. But for those of you who don't know, Russell is Truman's younger brother who got kicked by a horse at MTSU about years ago. Mm-hmm. And, of course, watched Mike. I don't remember you playing football, but I did watch Mike play.
Yeah, you probably weren't even born.
I've heard you brag about playing, but I don't remember you playing. You guys remember him playing? He was good. I know you were. Mm-hmm. Somebody said something about you had a fastball that would sometime eclipse 68 miles an hour, and I just couldn't believe
it. Well, at least it was over 50, I think.
Okay. You know, you were a really good baseball player, I heard.
Hey, and another thing I want to tell the folks, that Danny has some Mickey Mantle and Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams and some stuff, and Fred's going to come up and help him out. And I've got first dibs on Mickey Mantle because he was my hero when I was growing
Fred's
up.
Fred's got a pocket full of cash here for me, I think. I might have to send my business partner, who's also here,
out to get
those
things. He brought Ken Beck in, and he's going to take care of you.
You know, he'll be here for another 40 minutes if you want to go get those things, and we can bring them back out here and show them to me. So
that sounds like a good idea.
Well, I might just do that. But, yeah, it's fun growing up on Jakes Avenue, and there is no places like that no more.
No.
You know, for the Woodbury Highway, it's just amazing to sit and think that I can still, and I just said it, remember those people and remember the families, the mamas, the daddies, and there's probably two or three of them that's still on that street.
We were kind of the poor Camelot. We really were. We had the best of everything. We didn't have a whole lot of money, but we had a whole lot of love and a whole lot of friendship, and we had everything.
We could get a baseball game up in a heartbeat.
Yes. Yeah. and the bat had already been taped over three or four times with nails in it, and the balls were rewrapped, but we still had just as much fun.
I heard you talking to somebody one day about, I believe it was Woodrow Medlock. He had a pool over there.
Yes, he did.
And we used to go over there, and if you wanted to go swimming, you had to drive out by the Good Shepherd's home on your bicycle, and you go over there to Woodrow's. He's the only body within 2 or 3 miles or something that you could go, and all of us was over there every day just about in the summer swimming in that pool.
We weren't allowed to, so what we'd do is when we'd go swimming, we'd go fishing in the little lake over there next to it, and we'd watch when he was leaving, then we'd go swimming in his pool. He never did catch us, bless his heart.
Yeah, there was a big old fish in that little old pond
There was. And
David Moorhead caught that thing four times.
Yeah. He finally ran David off. He wouldn't let him come over and fish anymore.
I can't imagine somebody doing that to David. Oh, my. But, yeah, I'm going to let these guys get in here and y'all can talk some real stuff. But this has been fun.
This is real stuff.
It's been fun, Truman. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny. Danny Page. I hear the drum roll as he leaves. And now we have Fred Goodwin and Ken Beck coming in. And a lot of you got to see Fred last Saturday when they had the Roy Rogers thing with Cheryl, and it was absolutely a success. I can't think of having any more fun in the last few years than we had over there, and meeting Cheryl, and Fred introduced us to all the country western people and all the memorabilia they have. And of course, Fred still does a lot of that. He has a business. He takes care of the Sons of the Pioneers and Roy's family and all of that, and it's amazing that all the contacts you've made over the years. Of course, Fred, I've known him I knew him before when he was born, because of course we're first cousins. His mom and my dad are brother and sisters, and I worked for his dad, Robert Goodwin.
That's right, Butch. Oh, excuse me.
Oh, thank
Truman
you
Jr.
Thank you. Freddie.
Yeah. Thanks for the nice comments. Well, I have a good friend we brought in today. Mr. Ken Beck, who used to be one of the Ken, tell them exactly what you did for the Showcase for the Tennessean for many years.
I edited the Sunday Showcase magazine from 1977 till I think 2003.
Wow. That's one of my favorite things to read, because you had so many interesting things that went on there. And how in the world did you end up over at the Tennessean at that time?
I was born in Murfreesboro in 1951, and my dad was stationed at Seward Air Force Base.
Oh, wow.
This is probably a long way to get to your answer your question. My mother grew up in Reedyville. She was the oldest of 13 children, born to C.D. and Lois Rogers.
Oh, my.
And with the Air Force, you move about every 3 years. So my roots are deep in Reedyville. But I grew up mainly in Oklahoma and Arkansas. When I graduated from college in 74, because I love Middle Tennessee and came to see my grandma every Christmas and summer, this was where I wanted to live. So I moved to Lebanon, where I was Friendship Christian School's first football coach.
Oh, wow.
In 74. And 3 years later, pursuing my dream of wanting to be a writer, I was hired at the Tennessean, where I worked till from 77 to 2008.
And are you still writing now?
I am freelance writing from home. I write for a Wilson County newspaper, and then I write for the Murfreesboro Post and also the Cannon Courier.
So you and Ron Fry are big buddies.
Well, we're friends.
You know, writing is something that it takes a lot of, I guess, desire. It takes a lot of patience. And I've always admired people that could take all that information into their heads and transpose it over to paper and make something that's interesting. You know, I can pick up a lot of books and read them, and about 15 or 20% of them I really do like. And it takes a special person to be able to make that transformation. Because sitting here in front of a mic is easy for me. I mean, you can sit here and talk, and everything that comes in your head, it can come out whichever way you want it to. But when you're actually become an author, it's a different situation entirely.
Well, there are differences, but I tell people it's really all storytelling, whether it be on radio or television or newspaper or in a film or TV series. It's really about storytelling, and most of us are storytellers, even if it's just our own family story. So, I mean, I think almost anybody can be a writer if they want to, but it can be hard work, and you have to do it almost every day to continue to get better at it.
Now, if you were going to write a novel about Fred Goodwin, how would you? Because Fred is really interesting. I mean, he and I pick at each other a lot, but he really is interesting. He's led an interesting life, and one a lot of people would love to follow behind him and do. How would you start that?
I would probably start that on a Saturday afternoon at the matinee with Fred watching all those B-Westerns with his friends, because I think that's where his love for all of that probably started.
You know, I had so much fun as a little kid. You know, we'd be sitting on the front row of the Princess Theater, and we'd have our guns and shoot the bad guys, Charlie King, Roy Barcroft, all the bad guys. But we'd love Roy, but unfortunately, when Roy and Dale started those sort of loving scenes, kissing, you know, about to kiss or whatever. Shoot, I'd hightail it to the, you know, to the concession stand. Oh, I'd hightail it to the concession stand. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right for him to kiss Trigger, but he couldn't kiss Dale.
No, not any of them. But, you know, I fell in love with the Sons of the Pioneers, who I fell in love with.
Oh, I did too.
And there's the greatest Western group of all time. And actually, that's how Ken Beck and I first met. Was when Bob Nolan passed away, June 1980, and I called the Tennessean, and Ken had answered the phone. Anyway, we talked, and we've been friends since 1979. I mean, very close friends. We do a lot of things together, and we know a lot of the same people. And I'll call Ken and say, "Hey, what celebrity did you meet this past week? Who you writing a book on, or whatever?" And then he would always quiz me on things, and I'm glad to help him out on several of his books, but. The people out there listening to the audience, this is the same Ken Beck that's written over 37 books, and he's written the most famous, probably the most cookbook of all time, the Aunt Bee's cookbook, and the Western cookbook, and the Western barbecue cookbook, and they're very well distributed throughout the United States. Isn't that right, Ken?
I guess so.
Now, what got you interested in cookbooks, Ken? You just don't seem like the type.
Well, I'm not a cook. I would say Fred and I are friendship is probably started and founded in our love for cowboys. Part of the irony is, though, when the B Cowboys were at their height in the 40s and 50s, I never really grew up on them because I was living in England when my dad was stationed in the Air Force. So I missed the whole B cowboy western era.
You missed a great time.
Yeah, but because of television and DVDs, I'm catching up. but I did love the cowboys. So I grew up more on the TV cowboys like Cheyenne and Matt Dillon and the A Western films with Jimmy Stewart and Henry Fonda and all those guys.
You know, we just lost James Arness just recently.
Yeah.
And he was way on up because we used to watch him when I was a kid when the TV first came out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was in some of these B movies. In fact, James Arness got that job because of John Wayne. You know, they had talked to John Wayne first about getting on there. And, you know, it's so interesting how something like Westerns, I mean, the B Westerns, which I call the real Westerns, when they started, there is still a large segment of the population that still loves those things. And I think that as you get older, you even like them even more because it brings back your childhood and your younger years and times you like to remember with fondness. But one thing that Cheryl, when she was on my show, brought up, and this is, I don't know if you've ever written anything on Robert Blake or not, but that was one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had, simply because I remember him in the Little Rascals, or Our Gang, whichever one it was called at the time, and I remember him as Little Beaver with Red Ryder, and then I watched him as he grew older in some of these other movies, and she said, Bobby, she called him Little Bobby. She said he is a very good friend of hers, but she said he never was able to know who he really was because he was always in character with whatever the movie that he was starring in. And I find that probably was very interesting because of course his life's not over with, but he did get into a mess, as we all know, his wife at the time. And it was a nationwide scandal or whatever you want to call it. But his friends still stick by him because they know what he's been through. And, you know, you see that with a lot of movie stars. Do you, when you write your books, do you get into anything like that?
Well, I really don't get into things that are too scandalous. But I have noticed over the my course of the Tennessee, and I was fortunate to interview hundreds of movie stars and TV stars, and I was amazed at how many of them are, a lot of them are insecure.
Mm-hmm.
Become friends with two or three pretty good friends, and they call me from time to time, and I say, well, what have you been working on last? And they'll tell me about a TV series or movie, and then they'll go, but I don't know what's coming next. It's like, these people are so good at what they do. But they, I tell most of my friends in Wilson County that most of us are probably happier than most of the stars in Hollywood. They just, for whatever reason, have not found happiness, and it's certainly not in fame and money. It's got to be in family and friends, and a lot of them have just messed up at those things.
You think they're always looking over the next horizon, and they don't know what's going to come. I mean, you've heard all these stories about all these stars that want these special roles, and you think about it, very few of them come. There's a lot of talent that has to be there. But there's an awful lot of luck because, you know, talent's everywhere. I mean, we've got it right here in Rutherford County. There's people that become big stars right here, but they've never had the opportunity. And you got to have somebody there that's going to be favoring you, or you don't have a chance. And that's one thing I've always admired about Fred. He goes in and talks to all these people, and I guess you're kind of an agent, Fred. But you're more of a friend to them because you do so much with them and for them.
Well, with the Sons of the Pioneers and Roy Rogers' family, yes. Now, the other people, some of them are friends, like Jimmy Hawkins is a close friend of mine on the West Coast. Ken knows who I'm talking about, and he was Tag in the Annie Oakley series.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk quite often, and he always takes us out to dinner. Prissy and I were out in California, and he's a close friend, but he's also, there's a group of us that are real tight with the Rogers family and the Sons of the Pioneers, and they know who Ken Beck is, too.
Mm-hmm.
He knows Cheryl real well. In fact, he and Cheryl and Jim Clark wrote the Barbecue Cookbook that Cheryl sells out on the road. She does extremely good with that. And I just have a lot of fun with all these people. I was very fortunate to meet all the Cowboy stars, except there's probably maybe a dozen I didn't get to meet. Mm-hmm. But I've been all with them over the years. I got to meet Bob Still and all these people, all these great people.
Now he goes
and,
way back.
Well, they used to have these Western film festivals, and the number one was the Memphis Film Festival, and mm-hmm. then the Charlotte Film Festival. And I got right on the beginning of the Memphis Film Festival in 1974. I got to meet all these guys. I never forget meeting Buster Crabbe and what's the other guy's name? I can't remember right now.
See, Buster Crabbe
Crabbe, and there's another
Space
character.
Things when he first started.
I'll get in a second. But I'll never forget meeting them. No, Sky King. Sky King and Buster Crabbe looked exactly like on television. I mean, in person. They looked exactly. And I'll never forget, they were both non-drinkers, and they could not stand long hair, couldn't stand the hippies. And Sky King was living, his name's Kirby Grant. He was mm-hmm. living down in Florida. And he was like, what do you call it, Ken? He was SeaWorld, spokesman for SeaWorld down there in Orlando. And he drove over to Titusville, and he had a car wreck, and he got killed.
Oh.
And I think Buster Crabbe died of natural causes. But they both looked really great.
Buster Crabbe was an athlete before he started
swimmer.
The movie. That's right.
His son lives out in out there close to my brother Sam, out in Phoenix area, and we've talked several times. His name is Cuffy, mm-hmm. but we just never got together.
Now, what happened to Penny? We were talking about
Penny
Sky
died
King.
Just a few years ago. Ken, you're talking about Penny on Sky King.
You're right. Uh-huh.
She's one. All the guys were in love with Penny, especially Truman Jones.
Yeah, she was beautiful. Danny Oakley too.
Yeah, she was a very attractive lady. Her name was Gail Davis.
Yeah.
She started out as Gene Autry's.
That's a very unique voice.
Yeah. She started out with Gene Autry in the movie series. Mm-hmm. Then she did some television. And then she had her own television series in the mid-1950s.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Fred and Ken.
Sausage and biscuits, gravy and grits, home ground, homemade, it'll give you fits. Blueberry pancakes and corn cakes too, I'm a-licking my lips, now how about you?
Tom Brady will be delighted to see him there. Tom Brady is the one who rebuilt the mill and is now fully operational. They have breakfasts there on Saturday morning from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Nora's in there helping him. And whatever they fixed you is made right there at the mill. And it's an amazing place right on the river. Take about a 10-minute drive out John Bragg Highway. And just before you get out of Rutherford County, you'll see Cripple Creek on the right. Turn left there on the old Woodbury Highway. About a 2-mile drive. Go right over the river. Turn left. And if the parking place is not full, now if it's full, you'll have to turn right. If you get a chance, go out there anyway, because you'll never regret it.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Hello, this is Jim Bryan at First Bank.
And I'm Chuck Lewis. First Bank presents Good Neighbor Events, news of what our local schools, churches, and community groups are doing.
It's Wednesday, and time for Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank. On hot days, be sure and check on your senior citizen friends and loved ones. Fans and air conditioners definitely do save lives. And if you need one, call Dwight Ogleton at the Cool Aid Program. That phone number is 818-2459. Did you get that? 818-2459. At 6 this evening, the Central Magnet School Tigers face the 7U FCA Golden Eagles, and proceeds benefit Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, fighting childhood cancer one cup at a time. So come on over and enjoy plenty of lemonade, 6 o'clock tonight over at Barfield Park. At 7:45 in the morning, bright and early, the Chamber of Commerce University, a seminar on developing and motivating a team. Dale Carnegie of Tennessee President Alan Walker will teach the class. The fee is $20 for chamber members and $30 for non-members. Right now, while you're thinking about it, call them, 893-6565. That's at 7:45 in the morning at the Chamber of Commerce. There's an Alzheimer's care group meeting tomorrow night at 5:30 over at Stones River Manor. It deals with changes in Alzheimer's disease, especially in the late stages of the disease. The evening also includes a free dinner. It starts at 5:30 tomorrow night at the Stones River Manor at 205 Haynes Drive. If you have any questions, call 893-5617. Oh, I wanted to mention, last weekend I saw the Dinner Theater at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. A Little Murder Never Hurt Anyone. Great play and delicious food from B. McNeil's. Good Neighbor Events brought to you by First Bank.
Weather Eye.
A blend of clouds and some sunshine develops this afternoon, high in the mid-90s. Tonight, becoming cloudy. Slight chance of a shower or storm, low near 70. Chance of storms on Thursday. I'm WGNS meteorologist Laura Lockwood. Right now it's 88.
And today's special at Kirk & Burt's is our chicken tender basket. Three hand-breaded tenders and fries for just $3.99. Need an office party or special event catered? Call us at 893-FOOD. This is Tom, and we also deliver in the Case and Lane area.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
Welcome back with us. Have Fred Goodwin, Ken back on today, and want to let you know about the people that have a business on 231 South, almost just before you get to Chevron. We're talking about Mark Pirtle and John Howerton, and it's called Pirtle Howerton Automotive, and they're at 2006 North Main Street in Chevrolet. And you can reach them at 1-800-264-6800, toll-free, or pirtlehowerton.com. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, that's the place to go to. And they're such a friendly place to go and have fun with, drink a cup of coffee, and they're not pushy. You just go in, find what you think you want. They'll go around with you and make sure that you're satisfied when you leave. Well, Ken, we were talking about some things while we were off the air, and one of the last book that you penned was in 2008. And it's about a very interesting individual, because I got to meet him through Uncle Robert, Robert Goodwin, when I was working at the sheriff's office. And he actually came by and visited with us, and he was such a present. We're talking about Buford Pusser. And how were you able to get the information that you obtained for that book?
Well, I've always been fascinated by Buford Pusser. In 1973, I saw the movie Walking On, and it was just left an impression. It was first movie, and maybe the only movie, where at the end everybody in the crowd stood and clapped and cheered.
Right.
And so I barely knew it. He only had one child by birth, Duana, who lives in Adamsville, where Buford was from. And I'd heard through the grapevine that she'd been wanting to write a book. So I'd approached her and said, you know, I'd like to, my writing partner Jim Clark and I would be interested if you want to do this. We'd like to help you do it. So we met and talked and agreed. And through Duana, she tells the story of her father's life in her own voice, but she also set us up with all of his best friends from his childhood, whom we were able to sit down with for hours at a time and interview and collect their stories and memories. And it's, you know, he truly was larger than life. He was a giant of a man.
He was.
Pro wrestler. He really did walk into a bar one night and get in a fight with six men and knock three of them out and put three in the hospital and three in jail. You know, his story is fascinating, and because of the way he died in a car crash and the mystery around it, I mean, he became a legend.
Did you get into any of that? When he had his accident, I think it was in a Corvette. I'm pretty sure
yes,
that was
it
right.
Yes, it was.
And did you get into any of the undercurrents that were going on at that time?
We got into all of that.
Good.
And in fact, the last chapter or two really lays out Duana's theory of why she believes he was murdered. And part of that comes through a very long letter that was given to her anonymously that tells about some of the things going on. I don't want to go into great detail
here,
right. But
what's the name of the book before we get any further?
The title is Walking On.
Walking On
by Dwanna Pusser.
Okay, she changed that from Walking Tall to Walking On.
Right.
Uh huh.
Because she talks about how it affected her life. We can imagine at age 5 having your mother murdered,
mm-hmm.
and then just a few years later, I believe when she was 13, her dad dies in the car crash. So obviously it impacted her life in every way.
Mm-hmm.
But she shares memories of her mother and father, and then how all of this has influenced her life as she's gotten older and looks back upon it. I mean, there are so many incredible stories behind it, and more tragedies than just the death of her father. For example, he had a life insurance policy, which mm-hmm. he left. I'm thinking about $500,000.
Wow.
Well, her grandmother sort of looked over the estate. Well, her grandmother totally believed that her son had been murdered, so she basically spent all of that money.
Oh, no.
But unfortunately, the gentleman she hired to investigate turned out to be a con man, so all these provisions that her father had left so that she'd be taken care of were really just went up in smoke.
That's so sad. But when you were talking to her, did she relate the movie to you as to the authenticity of it or how well it was done?
She did, and she remembers actually when they made the film, she actually became pretty good friends with the two young actors that played herself and her brother.
Mm-hmm.
But she said the movie is about, she'd say 80-90% accurate, and that's what her father said. It was mm-hmm. it was pretty close. You know, Hollywood's always going to dramatize things mm-hmm. a bit. For example, he never really did carry that big stick. That was Hollywood.
I've got one of those. Oh, no.
Well, he did on one occasion
uh-huh.
go in with a stick and beat up a guy, but yeah. that was pretty
kind of like an axe handle or something like that. Because yeah. he brought some with him when they were making mm-hmm. the movie
yeah.
and stopped by the sheriff's office and gave some of us a stick. Fred's probably got one. Got two of them.
I'm afraid that stick is much more fiction than fact.
Oh, I hate that.
But these are autographed, though.
Yeah. But did you, I'm sure that you went around in that area where everything, and we're talking about state line,
mm-hmm.
and that's why there was so much corruption down there, which is often happens between states.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel when you were in that area?
You know, of course, it was so long ago, it's no way like that now. It's mm-hmm. more of a ghost town, but it is fascinating, the history, and really the history of that state line between Tennessee and Mississippi, Corinth, mm-hmm. Mississippi. It really all came from Phoenix City,
and that's
Alabama,
a famous place.
Where in the 1950s they were beating up GIs who were coming over from Fort Bragg, Georgia.
We were told to stay out of there when I was at Fort Bragg, mm-hmm. In a couple of other places down there, we were commanded to stay away from mm-hmm. Phoenix City.
And Phoenix City was, as far as I know, the only place in America where the National Guard had to come in and take over because it was so bad. The crooks and thieves were so bad, they came in. Basically, they chased out part of that element, and that's where they went,
mm-hmm.
to just north of Corinth, Mississippi, and set up shop there with, you name it, prostitution, drugs, mm-hmm. alcohol, and murder.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Buford Pusser sort of got into a one-man army war with them because they'd done some things to him when he was a young man. He'd gotten beat up down there and nearly killed. And one of the fascinating things, several fascinating things about Buford Pusser is that in many ways he was a poor boy from Tennessee, mm-hmm. and he had a lot of humility about him and kindness towards people that were poor.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing about him was that if you ever did him wrong, he would get revenge. Buford Pusser remembered everybody that did wrong to him. If you did him wrong, he was going to get you back. And obviously he got into this war with that element, along that state line mob, and it was a vicious war. Cost him his wife.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. And the thing about being a sheriff in an area like that, or a law enforcement person, is I have talked to some that were from that area, had been in law enforcement. You can't get a true picture by talking to them because there's so many different versions of what was going on, and that happens everywhere. I mean, if you're a law enforcement officer like Buford Pusser or any other law enforcement officer that wants to make a difference in their community, you're going to make enemies. And some of that is you're going to draw a bad reputation from doing what you think is right. And I've always found that that was one of the most interesting parts about the job is how people perceive what you're doing. And how did you relate to any of that at all? Because I know you talked to a lot of people down there.
You know, the feeling I got from visiting with a lot of the people down there, and I assume this was probably about the same when he was alive, it's about a 50-50 split of those who were pro Buford Pusser and those who were anti. And of course, in a small rural area like that, McNary County, there are the typical jealousies and political things going on in politics behind these offices that people are elected to. And so, you know, I mean, from everything I read in researching and people I talked to, though, I think Buford Pusser was basically a pretty good man.
I think he was, too. Now,
obviously, as a lawman, did he go beyond what the badge should have allowed him to do? Yes, but that was the era. And I mean, that's the way it was 50 years ago, 100 years ago.
At that time, the law was a little bit more liberal with the officers at the time in using their judgment. And actually, if you've got the right people there in place in office in law enforcement, I think that's a great thing, because if you've got good people in there using their judgment for the people that they're dealing with, I think that's a whole lot more effective. But if you get the wrong people in there, then you've got a real mess. And and politics can be one of those things that can be either used for the good of mankind, or it can be self-serving. And that's the thing that you never know until you get somebody in there. And sometimes you never even know then. And when I went to work for Uncle Robert, talking about Robert Goodwin, I knew when I went to work for him that he was straight. I knew that there wasn't going to be anything that would be damaging to the reputation of the sheriff's office or anything like that. But that's the thing about politics. One of these days, you'll find out one way or the other how it really stands. And I find that interesting. And I'm so glad that you wrote that book, because I've got to get a copy of that book, because I haven't read it. In fact, I didn't know until you brought it up that you had written it. And you haven't been publicizing this, Ken, because that's a story that people in Tennessee love.
Yeah,
it brought the attention nationwide. And I remember sitting in the theater when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And of course, my favorite is Joe Don Baker. I think he did a better job portraying Buford Pusser than anybody else could have. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about Phenix City a minute ago. I know there's a movie that was done on Phoenix City years ago. I cannot
Phoenix City Story.
Okay.
Just a few years ago. Am I correct, Ken? It hasn't been that long.
Well, there was one from
this one was old.
This was from the mid-50s, and okay. The director of it is the same gentleman who directed Walking Tall.
Oh, really?
So he knew the history, too.
Yeah. And from what I can understand, it really hasn't cleaned up all that much. I mean, it's still a place that... And it's funny, the location, of course, it's on the border down there, but I wonder if having a base, a large base, close by may have influenced that, because see a lot of that close to army places.
And you get a lot of young men with their pay in their pants, and they're looking for a way to, you know, spend their time on the weekend.
Yeah, well they got to have a release somewhere, because they're under all of that regimentation and they're not used to it, and so they want to get away. And I can remember when I was at Fort Bragg, we had a little town just outside of Fort Bragg, and you couldn't wait to get there. And military guys don't have a whole lot of money. I mean, you maybe one weekend will blow your whole monthly paycheck. But I can remember going there, and the funny thing about it is we would catch a bus from where we were based at, and then we'd go to into the town. I'm not going to mention the town. But the funny thing about it, you know what the nickname for the bus was? The Vomit Comet. Because everybody go in and just have as much as they could drink and then come back. They would. I can remember back then that a lot of times they stopped the bus and just get us all off the bus and see what kind of shape we were in.
Let me put in a plug for the Buford Pusser Home and Museum. It's in the home that he raised his children in Adamsville. It's a museum. It's owned by the state of Tennessee.
Oh, really?
And when you walk in, it's exactly the way it was the day he died.
So
you're walking into a 1973 house with his bedroom, his clothes are hanging in the closet, his shoes are there. It's really an amazing place to visit. Part of the charm in these small towns, though, is I noticed the first time I went and paid my fee, they had to make change, and they went into the kitchen, which is the only room you're not allowed to go in, and they keep their bills and change in a cookie jar.
Oh. does his daughter have any, does she receive anything at all from that?
She does not, but she has her website. You could Google it and find her website. She does make speaking appearances talking about her father's life. And she keeps alive his legacy with a festival every Memorial Day weekend. They have a Buford Pusser festival there. And the funds are used to, if I remember right, to help keep the park there. They usually bring in a lawman from around the United States and give him a Buford Pusser award every year. So they have, they have a
tribute. Is that in Adamsville?
Yes.
And see, to get to Adamsville from here, how would people go?
The quickest route is Interstate 40 to exit 108, and then go straight south through Lexington on into McNary County, straight into Adamsville. It's a very small town, and his home and museum is, if you enjoy law enforcement and his story, it's just like you walked into his house and he just stepped away. It's really amazing.
Is there a place to stay down there for people who want to go down and spend the night and maybe just take in the whole scenery?
I don't know of any motels. There probably are some there. I'm not sure. I
thought there might be an inn or some type of... Yeah.
It's not far. It's probably just 10 or 12 miles from Savannah, which is right on the Tennessee River, which probably is more of a tourist town, catfishing, that sort of thing.
I'm really surprised that they didn't... When that movie came out, it made him such a hero. I'm surprised that they didn't do more for that area because... I mean, you're talking about a historical event.
Well, again, the politics. When they made that movie, it was Bing Crosby Production Company. They wanted to actually film in McNary County, but the politicians in power at the time were jealous of Buford, and they didn't allow it. So they actually shot it in Henderson County. A lot of it was shot in the other counties, again, just because of the politics going on.
Well, talking about politics, they had, in that movie, they had... the big politics coming out of Nashville at that time. Now, did you get into any of that? And I don't want to talk too much about the book, but I do want to let the people know a little bit about it, what they're buying.
Well, let me just say this. Buford Pusser and Ray Blanton were both from Adamsville. Buford Pusser's family was Republican. Ray Blanton was Democrat. When Blanton ran for governor... his father approached Buford Pusser and said, "Would you help my son campaign?" And Buford Pusser did agree to help Ray Blanton. So he toured with him, and I'm sure garnered him many votes as he crossed the state with him. Buford was under the impression that if Blanton won the race, that he was going to make him the commissioner of the
safety.
And that didn't happen. Of course, we know the mess that Ray Blanton got into later. And that's one of the theories, was his death. Could his death have been connected with the Ray Blanton administration? And again, you'll need to read the book to find out more.
You're whetting my appetite already. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
What a day.
Is it true about you and Charlene?
Who's Charlene?
Oh, no. You have... amnesia again.
Seriously, what's with the music?
I'm playing new instant games. I like to add extra drama before I scratch.
Well then, I am your husband's secret twin brother. Instant games from the Tennessee Lottery. Play them in your own way. And now play the newest games. Hot, hot cash, hundreds of dollars, triple winning sevens, and stacks of cash. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
It says here the Tennessee Lottery has raised $2 billion for education in just over 7 years. It would take forever to count that high.
Actually, Dad, if you counted a number every second, it would take 63 years.
How'd you get so smart?
I'm a Hope Scholar.
Students across the state are benefiting from Tennessee Lottery-funded programs. Let us know how these dollars have impacted your life. Share your story of hope at seehowitaddsup.com. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
This is Sean Brown at Southeastern Tire Service, where we now offer the Michelin Promise Plan. The Michelin Promise Plan is a new offer which includes a 30-day ride guarantee, 3-year flat tire changing assistance, and a limited mileage warranty on all Michelin passenger and light truck tires, replacement and original equipment. Did you know we now provide air conditioning service? Let our ASC certified technicians get your car road ready today.
Southeastern Tire Service on Broad Street across from Advance Auto.
Slick Pig Barbecue. Down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all you can eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pig Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
The local conversation continues now on The Truman Show. Once again, here's Truman Jones.
Welcome back with us. And we're having more fun up here talking. And I'm sorry that you're missing a lot of it with Ken Beck and Fred Goodwin. And I am so fascinated with that book. And tell everyone out there how that they can purchase that book and what they need to do.
It's titled Walking On by Dwana Pusser with Ken Beck and Jim Clark. And you can, if you Google Dwana Pusser's name, it will take you to her website. You can buy it from her. She'll sign it for you. Or you can go to Amazon.com.
Now, how do you spell her first name?
D-W-A-N-A.
D-W-A-N-A.
Dwana.
Dwana.
Uh-huh.
That's an unusual name.
She has a grandson whose name is Buford.
Oh, really?
He's not a pusser, but they did.
Is he a big guy, too?
Well, he's young. He's still young. I don't know how big he'll be.
Now, all of your books that you have written, which are a great number of them, they can reach also by your name.
If you just go to Amazon.com and put in Ken Beck, you'll find most of them there.
Mm-hmm. Now, who published your book?
The Walking On book was published by Pelican Press out of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
A number of the books that Jim Clark is, who my writing partner on most of my books, and most of those were done with Rutledge Hill Press, which has now become part of Thomas Nelson in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So most of them are with several of them are with.
That's
Thomas
a difficult
Nelson.
Thing to do is find a publisher for a book now, isn't it?
You know, it's a crazy world. Jim and I have been doing this since 1985, and most of the publishers that we had relationships with are out of the business or their companies have been bought out. So now a lot of our books are owned by people that we don't know and they don't know us.
but they're not like the newspapers are. The newspapers are really taking a lick across the country.
Well, and book publishing has as well. Bookstores are folding right and left. Several of the chain stores have gone under. It's just a different world because the internet is part of it. There's so many television channels. They have a channel for everything, a court channel.
Mm-hmm.
And my children, who are in their early 30s, they don't read the newspaper like I do. I love mm-hmm. to read the newspaper. So society's changing and everything else changes along with it. So newspapers as well as the book world has really been turned upside down in the last decade. But the internet is opening new possibilities. And I'm convinced that, for example, for book publishing, 20 years ago, it would be very hard to self-publish and do very well. There are exceptions to the rule. But mm-hmm. today with the internet, you can self-publish and you can create your own website. And if you can get a buzz going, you can do well. So as things change, you just have to, you have to roll with the punches and figure out how to make it work for you.
Well, the way the kids are now, they had rather get everything on the internet. Will we see a time when it won't be in book form that somehow they'll have to transfer it to the internet sites? And I hope that never happens because I just can't see that.
Well, it's already happening with the Kindle where you can actually have a tablet, sort of like a laptop, and read a book.
Mm-hmm.
And again, who knows where it's going to go? I mean, there's, for those of us who are 50 and older, and I mean that's tens of millions,
mm-hmm.
we love to hold a newspaper. We love to hold a book, and mm-hmm. we can carry it around with us in our car or wherever. So I'm convinced that books aren't going to die on the vine. People are still going to want to have books
mm-hmm.
and to read from a book for 20 or 30 more years. Now that number may be dwindling, but so often things come back in circles too.
Mm-hmm.
So who's to say, as things are going now to the internet for reading, our children are reading on the internet, who's to say when our children who are 25 or 30, by the time they reach 50, maybe they'll want to hold a book and read a book and have that in their library. So I don't know. I don't know where we're going, but again, you just have to roll what's happening as times change and figure out how to make it work for you.
You know, everybody has got a great story, just like Fred is sitting over here next to me. He could probably write 3 or 4 books just on his life and what he's done. And he'd probably need a ghostwriter like you, though, Ken.
I've always wanted to do about my Navy life. I always wanted to do a...
Well, that's the first paragraph.
Yeah. I had a great time. There's something else I was going to say. Ken knows so many people in the business, and he has to deal with a lot of celebrities. And I know one of his closest friends is George Lindsay. I think most people know who George Lindsay.
Yeah.
Ken wrote the book on George Lindsay.
His biography. Jim Clark and I sat down with him, and he told us his story, and we tape recorded.
Did he talk about Mayberry?
Oh, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. That's a good book to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he played the mechanic Goober.
Now what's the name of that book?
That's called Goober in a Nutshell.
That's pretty good. Did you think of that one yourself?
I think I did.
you know, he's such an interesting character what he plays. I bet he's totally different.
Yeah, I would say he is, but he knows that was his greatest role. He did a lot. He was on Broadway, and he was in some movies and other television shows. And, of course, he had the Hee Haw show for 20 years.
Yes.
But
did they make much money off of that?
They did all right.
Did they? When I was working in Nashville, that show was on. And a lot of times I would see them come over to – do you remember Speedy's Restaurant in Nashville? They would go there. It was a cafeteria, and I always thought that was so amazing to see them all come in there. And they would; they'd all be together, just like a bunch of buddies, and all the cast, and it was fun. And they would cut up. I mean, they were really a neat bunch of people.
Yeah, they were. They became a family, that Hee Haw cast. They came in twice a year and shot all that, like, in 4 weeks in the summer and four weeks in the fall, and that was, of course, edited into a year's worth of shows. Now, originally, they shot downtown at the Channel 5 studios, but eventually they moved to Opryland and shot in the TNN studios, because whenever I met with them, they all ate at Cracker Barrel.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, Brian's over there fidgeting again. We're going to have to leave. It's been such a fun show. I am so glad that y'all were on today. I mean, it was neat. And we've got to have you back on again. I mean, it really do, because there's a lot more that we need to discuss. So we will be back with you tomorrow. And I think my guest tomorrow at 2 o'clock is, let's see, Tommy Horde. Oh, that's going to be a great show. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.